good. Okay, let's plan a mission.
Yay!
Okay. Let's. They got enough missionaries. Let's plan a local mission very quickly. Let's say that you're all part of the apprenticeship program. Okay, and I'm telling you to do a local mission to Bellville South. So you know kind of a little bit about Bellville South, right? And I say it is. We know of at least one church there, Reformed Faith Mission, and they need a lot of help, a lot of assistance. There's a lot of evangelism that needs to be done. There's a lot of false gospels that are being preached. And we need the Word of God to go get into that society. We want to see transformation. That's our big goal. The big vision of Frontline Fellowship is Africa for Christ. So that's a big, broad vision. And there can be so much that goes underneath that. So, based on your experience that you've already had in Bellville South, and a little bit about what I said right now, identify some of the problems first, and then once we've identified some of the problems in that area, we'll identify some of the solutions and some of the things that we can do. So, what are some of the issues, the problems that are happening in Bellville South? And when you mention them, already be thinking of what kind of solutions we can come up with, Sky. Substance abuse. Here we go. Substance abuse is a big problem. Deception. Okay, so there's substance abuse. There's a lot of deception. Those are some of the big sins. Yes?
Laziness. A lot of the people are just sitting in the sitting rooms when we find labor.
All right. Could be laziness is another thing, yeah?
Occultic
practices. Yes, that's definitely there. Ray?
Violence.
Broken homes. Big problem.
Prosperity gospel.
Okay, so, yeah. Abuse, absolutely, within homes, probably maybe even within churches. Alright, got to keep that in mind too. Sky again? Gangs, obviously.
It was part of the broken homes, the children not having proper education.
Right, a lot of children that are on the streets. Mm-hmm. Okay, a lot of children that don't have homes, don't have role models, don't have Christ. What's that? Unemployment, big problem.
Nobody watching them when they're playing.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay.
Prostitution.
So, we've identified some of the sin problems. Okay, there are big sin problems in the area. There's church problems because false gospels are being preached. Alright, and then there is social problems such as broken families and children living on the streets. So those are three, can we say that those are three categories that need to be addressed? Mm-hmm. Okay, what can we do? Now, don't just give me wild ideas, things we could actually do using the resources we have here or the contacts that we have, some of the things, Emma.
Is there a program that's already going to be
right, so through the church we could probably get into the schools and maybe speak at the assemblies. We would have opportunities to maybe share the gospel, have a regular program. That would be very nice. Let's just dwell on this point for a bit. What could we do with the children? Since the children, I don't want to say the children are a problem, but the children are facing problems. So what could we do with them? We go to the schools, we preach the gospel, everybody lives happily ever after. What are some of the things, Brandon? There we go. That'll be effective. They love sports, right? Now, they don't have sports facilities. That would be a problem. Might be able to get somebody in to help us with that. Raise awareness. Maybe get some kind of park going. That would be nice. It would be a nice community project. Difficult to get going, though. It would be difficult to get going. That might be a more of a long-term thing. What might be better is if you use the facilities that are already there, like, you know, maybe not soccer or rugby, but basketball something that you could do on the concrete, you know. Just having maybe a gym facility might be helpful. That might be very much easier. Opening up a gym with weights and all kinds of things, and maybe have a park gym that you set up. That might be an easier thing to do, and open it from specific times or get the kids in, have mentors there, etc. Lily Jean. Very good. So you can set up a choir or worship team or whatever. Teach them to play instruments. If you can, who can play an instrument here? No, you can. Ray can. Three. So three, we have three music instructors already. Okay. Very good. Yes.
I think we can also, when you get these people together and children maybe at the after school and sing together and so on. But yeah, first you need to get the people to come and maybe tell them about plants. And if there are like an open garden or an open field or just a part of the school, get some of the unemployed people who are like sitting in the sitting rooms and tell them come and then like plant seeds and help them to grow their own food and
teach them about nutrition. Get them all organic. So then they will think more clearly and everything will
And then also but then also like get them involved in like a community. So they go to the church, let people the children play and plant and
No, that's good, that's actually very good. Okay, we're just having fun, but that's a good idea. Modly, are you cold? Okay. Yes, what is your idea? Yeah, so speaking in the assemblies, getting somebody who knows about drugs and saying to them, don't do it, right? Yeah. Very good, very good. Absolutely. Okay, okay, Shanna? Okay. I don't know how that would go, but that might be useful. Maybe setting up some kind of a gym for that. Now, those some of these projects would be long-term, some of them would be difficult to set up, some of them might be easier to do. Okay, there's... All right, let's just wrap up with the last three quickly.
Friday youth meeting.
Very good.
They can come together, share the gospel, maybe even some Christian films.
Absolutely. Youth ministry, there we go.
I would definitely say investing in like a small group of young people, especially like middle aged teenage people, and doing like discipleship, Bible study, prayer meeting, investing really heavily in a small group of people who will really get into this. Because you're not going to do that with like 100 young people, but a small group that you could really invest in is encourage them to go invest in young people and start
all right. Groups around. Okay, very quickly, how would you invest in that? Say I give you five young men, you. Okay, Isaac, I want you to look after these five young men. They kind of, you know, we think they're saved. They're not involved with too much trouble at this moment. Maybe one or two of them have just come out of trouble. All right, they need discipleship. What are some of the things you do?
Well, I would definitely start with a clear explanation of the gospel. We do several series on maybe, as one of those type of Luther Bell said or something, maybe you have just studies of the Bible and the honors of the attributes of God, who he is.
So teaching them the scriptures, teaching them the gospel,
the
right?
Scriptures, the gospel. Then maybe start, you could either stay on more of a more one-on-one level where you could talk about, practical things, problems in life, you know, how to overcome peer pressure, how to share your faith in especially in tough situations, how to avoid those situations, principles for, especially for like young men, people here have read many Alpha's books and security principles, but
no, you don't need to get into that.
Very good. Yeah. For discussion.
Yeah, I think helping them to heal within themselves and to do that with sword and whatnot before they having to go and kind of assist some people, making sure that they are.
But yeah, sometimes part of the restoration is actually investing in others as well. Very good. So meeting with them regularly, discipling them, one-on-one discipleship is absolutely essential, just listening to them. pointing them to the scriptures. And, okay, now I think more practically, we have the Biblical Worldview Summit, right? Bring them, we got five guys, bring them to the Biblical Worldview Summit. Get them involved with pro-life things, like we've got a March for Parliament coming up soon. Bring them with you, you know? Show them how to make a stand for their faith. Get them out evangelizing. Those are positive things that they've got to get involved with. So it's not just, you don't see them as counseling cases. Okay, you got to, you can't do that. You got to get them active as well.
That's good.
Sky.
You can often just set up the short term, medium term, and long term.
Very good, yeah.
Set up steps for getting those goals.
Yeah, so coaching then. Life coaching. Very good. That's very useful. Okay, we've had enough of the children now. So that's kind of dealt with some of the things going on with children. Now you also got to bear in mind some of these children are very hungry, right? They don't have food, they're coming to a meeting, they don't have anything to eat. You have to deal with that somehow. You have to use a lot of wisdom too. The whole time you want to be working through the local church though. You don't want to go there and start running your own thing. You don't know the people, right? Majority of you don't know the culture. Okay, and now, I mean, I've been living in Cape Town for a very long time. I'm a South African. Some aspects of the culture are foreign even to me. Okay, so I'm well aware of that. So I want to be working, submitting up to Reformed Faith Mission, asking them all these things as we go along. Okay, church problems. The big church problems over there. Prosperity gospel, false doctrines being taught. This is something that many of you could actually make a big influence in. So think about how you could fight against the false gospel being preached. Okay, teach discernment. Let's stop there. How do we teach them discernment? Practical. Don't tell me we will teach the pastors. Give me practical steps for how to... Oh, you want... Okay, Lily? Okay, very good. So that's kind of the method you will use. I want to know, practically... Okay, I'm telling you, I want you to go to Bible South and help people practice discernment. What do you do? Okay, what practically are you going to do?
I think maybe we're starting with the Way of the Master questions, and then the Ten Commandments.
Yeah.
And
okay, that's good. That's methodology. Sorry to interrupt.
No.
That's methodology.
Oh,
I'm saying,
like what
are you
do?
Going to do? You're gonna pick up the phone and call the town hall and set up a conference. What are you going to do?
I think setting up a conference, but also practically getting examples. Of people teaching and the things they say and how to listen very intently to what preachers say these days and many of the false teachings that they give. And then asking the people what did this person say that isn't in alignment with the word and testing them on that and asking them what did they hear that then didn't seem correct and then working from there on and kind of teaching them as they go on.
That's very good. So we want to be very hands-on. We want to use different educational methods. Okay. Now I don't want to hear anything to do with the content. Okay. I don't want to know what you're going to do content-wise. I don't want to know how you're going to accomplish this. Isaac, you've had your hand up for a while.
I would definitely go first to the Reformed Faith Fellowship and. You know, be based under their authority, but they would be, and then go from there, of course, you just take advice from them, and you know, what start with basic fundamentals in, you know, basically expanding on what they're already doing.
Yeah, okay. Content. Okay. Now, I'm a logistics guy. I do this. It's my bread and butter, okay? Logistics, it's running through my... I'm always thinking logistics. So what I'm hearing is a lot of content, but as someone who organizes and helps others organize missions, I want to know, what are you going to do? Tell me about your content. How are you going to do this, Carl?
basically, all the sessions I've been doing be Father, Prince, and Christ.
I don't want to hear content. For me, content is fluff. Alright? I want hard, I want solid facts. What are you going to do, Emma? Okay, so you're going to work with a church, you're going to make an announcement, you're going to do a conference. Can I say that? Emma wants to do a conference. Okay, let's work with that. We are now having a conference in Bible South for discernment. What? Don't tell me what you're going to talk about, okay? Don't talk to me about discernment. I don't care, alright? I want to know, what are you going to do?
Apologetics, questions and answers, advertise that we can come ask questions, things that you may be struggling with, answers that you may not have, and answer questions that people have.
Okay, you're going to advertise?
Yeah.
How?
Or you can advertise through flyers, you can go hand out flyers, and on lamp posts, you could probably advertise on lamp posts.
Okay, good, that's a cost though, so yeah. Bear that in mind. So now you need a budget. Alright, you need a budget to set up this conference that includes advertisements. Bear that in mind, Kyle.
I would go more along the lines of word of mouth. So like if you're not out of it, okay, all the resources in people that they have.
Okay, word of mouth who?
In the neighborhood and surrounding areas, because you have super mosquito. Once you have it, they are separate things, different groups, and different people, and teaching different languages.
Okay, so now we've got a discernment seminar that includes for children, teenagers, and adults?
Yeah.
Okay, so now it's getting big. Alright? You want to have a discernment seminar that includes children's teachers, children. What is children's? Children.
Teenagers.
And adults. Now you need a venue for this. Right? You need a venue and you need the staff for this. And then you're going to start thinking about, you got to feed all these people too. Because believe me, if people come to a conference, they want to eat. Now you got to be thinking of this, right, Shanna?
I think also, like, going to the local newspaper or to the local radio station and
find very good. So at your disposal right now is Radio Tigerbird. Now that's realistic. And they broadcast into Babelsa, and I think a lot of people, they actually listen to it. Alright? So, very good. Now you've got a good form of advertisement that's not going to cost you anything. It may not be that effective. People don't always respond to the radio invitations, but it's one of the avenues. When you're advertising, you need multiple avenues of information. If they're hearing it on the radio, through flyers and word of mouth, your chances of getting somebody to respond are much higher. When you do a mass marketing campaign, such as flyers, or through radio or television, you should only expect about 1% of everybody to respond. So you print 100 flyers, probably only going to get about one person responding. That's just the reality, Kyle.
I would then go to the affluent areas and make them aware of.
Did you say affluent areas?
Affluent
areas.
Yeah.
So hey, we're working in Balbasa.
Yeah, and get some funding as well as catering options. So basically, these people, like I said, need to eat.
What do you mean affluent? What do you mean?
The well-off areas are going to churches in the well-off areas.
And ask them to sponsor your conference.
Based on the need that has to be.
That's good.
Yeah. Do you think you can do that? Yeah, that's not easy. Alright? You're going to now go and meet with a pastor of a church that doesn't know you, doesn't know Bible South, doesn't know Reformed Faith Mission. And so now you're going to meet with this pastor and you say, I want to talk to these guys about discernment. Please give me money.
No,
you know what I'm not saying that's what you're going to do. I'm just saying, think carefully through it.
Because what I would do is research
the
pictures, show them
me, and very good, yeah. So you'd have a nice plan to offer them. Very good. Now, do you know what denomination Reformed Faith Mission is under?
That
very good. So that's an obstacle, but they're associated with.
That's
solar-fide churches. There are solar-fide churches around Cape Town. There are, I think, four of them in Cape Town. If anybody's going to sponsor this event, it's going to be other solar-fide churches. Madly. Down for now. I know it's exciting, right? But what, now you want to actually go and do this for me. Now you got to be careful of a lot of minor logistic details as we're throwing these ideas around. Let's start with this. What is your venue? School?
My church.
School hall? All right. That could work. Yeah, so the school hall could work. But if you use the school hall, you can't do the age-segregated thing. Which is not a bad idea, but I wouldn't do it for this particular conference, right? The sermon, and in terms of advertising as well, I wouldn't rely too heavily on the mass marketing. I would go to the pastors of churches in the local areas, and invite them personally to come to the discernment conference. I wouldn't even call it a discernment conference necessarily. I would call it something else. You can get creative. Something like that, or what? Biblical perspectives on prosperity. I don't know, something like that. Something that adds a bit more depth to what you're actually going to do. Very good, very good. I'll get to that in a moment. Does it have to do with the venue?
It has to do with the speaker.
I'll get there now. I'll get there now. All right. So you got the venue. You got the church hall. Yes. Yeah, it is good. But I think you could, when you want to use school grounds and stuff, that's more for maybe a gospel, I don't want to say crusade, but a gospel crusade kind of thing, you know. When you're talking about now assisting, remember our vision is to assist people because there is a prosperity gospel that's being preached, false gospel, so we need to get people out of that. So we need to instruct them in a biblical gospel and expose the follies. Some of you have already spoken to me about the content that you want to use. So we've got the venue. Now the people want to eat. You said you want to get sponsorship. Yes. You could do that, but you might struggle a little bit with that. I would make the people pay to come to the conference. Right? Not a lot. 10 Rand. Maybe 20 Rand. You can do a lot with that. We've had a conference here. We charged them, 20 Rand? Maybe 30 Rand or something. And it was not even a required fee. We had I think it was 20 Rand suggested donation to contribute towards the lunch. And people actually donated a lot more than that. We had more money than what we needed to feed everybody. We ended up making money. We didn't want to, but I mean, when we counted it at the end, we had a bit of surplus. So you could do it that way. That's one way to go about it. Yeah, you just need the personnel to head it up and be in charge of it. Tuck shop has you will make a lot of money. You really will.
I think when people pay for something, they value it. So
yes, very good. Materials, what kind of materials are you going to have? You're going to provide pens and papers, books and leaflets, DVDs, MP3s, whatever? Think practically. Hey, that's a good idea. We've got a lot of books here. Alright, that we could use. Justin Peters has given us permission to duplicate in DVDs. Get everybody who comes to the conference, we could give them a copy of A Call for Discernment, the full presentation that they can take home and watch a show to their people. That does cost money. It costs about 25 rand or so to produce one of these. Maybe 30 rand.
Yeah.
We could even sell them, right, if they really want these, and you could just have lecture notes plus these for sale if you're tight on money. Oh yeah. People always have facilities for watching things. If not, what you could do is you get a some routers, some wireless routers can be used to create a wireless network. Alright, so it's not connected to the internet, they're just connected to your wireless network, and from your wireless network they can download this content onto their smartphones, tablets, or computers just by connecting to your network. It's a nice way of doing conferences now. Or if you have a Raspberry Pi, you can do exactly the same thing. You just broadcast, people connect to your network, no password even required, and they just download the video content straight from the network. No cost required.
Like a Raspberry Pi.
It's almost like a mini computer that you can do almost anything with. You can use it to extend the network. You can run software from it. Oh, there's many things you can do with it. The Linux junkies and stuff like that know what it is. Okay, so you've got that. Speaker, who's going to talk to these people about this? So that's an issue. Right? Are you going to do it?
We get someone that's popular there that they like.
Oh, so someone from the area.
No, or maybe that they've heard about before, someone that people speak about, so like yourself.
Like Quentin Monaville.
Someone like that.
Alright, a very good speaker there. But you also want the factor of... Quentin is very well known. He's the superstar there.
John.
Yeah, they're brothers. It's very easy to get me to speak there, but I might not be all that exciting for them. But yes, just to have somebody outside might be more... No, Quentin. We know Quentin. He's just that reformed guy, and his church is small anyway. What does he know? Okay? But it's good. Get a local guy, get some people from the outside. So you've got me, you've got Quentin. If you're running a two-day conference, that might be enough. You might want more, yes.
I don't think it would be bad to challenge one of our staff, like Quentin, to do as well, because what we've learned, to put it into practice, because we aren't here
that's very good. Okay, so we're going to Bible South next week, Friday, to run the discernment seminar. Who here wants to give a presentation or share a testimony? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Wow. Specifically about discernment?
Yes.
Wonderful. Okay, so I'm doing my job a little bit. All right, so that's good. Guys are excited about that. Okay.
I've talked with you before, John, just to get my
life right. Alright, so you got these things. So you got people bringing money. You're going to provide food for them. You'll need to make the itinerary and all that. So there's a lot of logistics that will come later, which I would try help talk you through if I was helping you do this. Program that would need to be done. I would make one of you do that. Yeah. Who's going to cook? You got the money, you got the food, two people,
I know an organization that cooks like 60,000 meals a month, they're a Christian organization that does food, so you can get through them.
Is it nice food?
They make that
just keep on complaining, brother, let me tell you, they come to the conference.
Very good food, I've eaten.
It's good. Okay, that's good.
They make like one pot wonders, but really like nutritional food.
What it's worth, when I had the conference here, but how many people? 40 people? My wife cooks for all of them.
Wow.
Hey.
And she just had the baby. And just before that, I had another conference. How far along were you? Like 6 or 7 months? 38 weeks. Okay, that was 38? She's 38 weeks pregnant, so you're pregnant for 40 weeks. She's 38 weeks pregnant, and she cooked for, I think it was 30, 35 people there.
Yeah, I think we had a team of
3 people
who were in charge of that.
I just cloned my wife. That confused me a lot. Okay. Good, so those are just some logistics, and that's for a local mission. Let me take you through some things that you need to do in preparing for any mission. Spiritual preparation. First and foremost, spiritual preparation. This includes a balanced devotional life, daily prayer and Bible study for personal enrichment. Guys, spiritual warfare is real. Right? When you're out doing the Lord's work, things get tough. You get a lot of attacks. If you're going with a team of people, if you're going with a large team of people, it is going to be difficult. Can you imagine traveling in that bus, right, the Colin's vehicle, full with 8 or 9 people from this course, alright, for 2 months? You're going to start arguing, bickering. I'm going to be in charge. You're going to get irritated with me because I have a way of doing things, and I'm going to be telling you to do things all the time. You're going to be tired. I'm going to ask you, please, go take the vehicle and go get it filled with petrol, and it's going to be, you know, 10 o'clock at night. Oh, why does John want to do this? And I'm going to say, Emma, you're in charge of making sure that we always have water, because you're going to a lot of places where there is no water. We can't rely on municipal water, so you've got to make sure the water tanks are full. And we're going to get there, I'm going to see half of the water tank is empty. Emma, come look here. First thing is half empty. What's going on? You must listen, please. Come on. And I'm feeling irritable because I'm hot and I'm tired and I'm missing home. And, you know, and I'm, you know, I've got my own, I'm sick, and I've got my own issues to deal with, and I'm dealing with your issues too, and you're dealing with each other's issues. It gets tough, right? We've had missions. Thankfully, I've never been on a mission where I've had serious contention with anybody else, but others have gone on such missions, and it gets difficult. Every person needs to take personal responsibility for their emotions, their feelings, and then as a group, we try and help and encourage each other when we have time. It doesn't always work out that way. Okay, but spiritual preparation. Be sure of that. Make sure you have a faith that's worth exporting.
Mm-hmm.
Mental preparation. Be very disciplined and diligent. Learning about the people that you're going to. Who are they? What is their background? What is the culture? What is their language? What are the struggles that they're dealing with? What are the sin issues that they're dealing with? What are the cultural sins that they're dealing with? Those are the most difficult ones to deal with. Do some research. Who's gone there before? Who's been the most effective? What kind of work has been done there in the past? What kind of presentations are you going to give? Are you ready for that? Let me tell you something. This aspect of preparation is sometimes the one that is overlooked most frequently. It's been days before I'm meant to leave on a mission, and I think to myself, what am I going to speak to these people about? It's just the reality, because you get so caught up in preparing. I've got to get all my documents ready, the finances ready, I've got to get all my communication, the itinerary. I've got other people I need to worry about because it's the first time they're going on the mission, so I'm trying to help them get ready. And all these things. I've got ministry at my home church that I'm still doing right up until the day that I'm leaving. I'm preaching sermons, doing series, doing lectures, speaking at Reformation Society. I've got radio on Tuesday night. And the last thing I'm thinking about actually is the ministry I'm going to do to the people 4 weeks from now. Right now I've got to go to a discernment conference in Zimbabwe. What on earth am I going to speak to them about? So, you have to be very disciplined in trying to prepare it like this. Emotional preparation. Sometimes you feel like a flat tire. Be prepared to be disappointed. Be prepared to run a seminar and nobody's going to show up. Be prepared for everything to run late all the time. Be prepared for things to get stolen. Be prepared for obnoxious border officials to try and get money from you. Alright? Be prepared for roadblocks and police stops. You're going to travel through Zimbabwe, to go through at least 70 police stops along the way. And they're going to stop you, and they're going to make you get out the vehicle. And they're going to say, where are your reflector stickers? This one is too small. You must pay a fine. It's dirty, I can't see it. You must pay a fine. Put on your lights, come look over here. You see this little light that's meant to shine on your license plate? That's not shining. You must pay a fine. It looks inside the vehicle. You're overloading the vehicle. You must pay a fine. Why does this person have books on their lap? You're mixing goods with passengers. Pay a fine. These are real, real things that they will tell you about. Aubrey can tell you even more stories of how they do these things. And now you must choose. They're going to fight this person. They're going to pay the fine. Are you going to try and make friends with them? Are you going to use the opportunity to share the gospel? But actually just use the gospel to try and get out of the trouble. Right? What are you going to do? Are you going to offer to give the guy a Bible? So that you don't have to pay the fine.
Bible?
now you've got, not only do you have what must you do, but you've got some moral questions about what you do. He says to you, you have to pay $50 for the fine. But if you don't want to receive, you only have to pay $10. Right. You pay the $10?
Yeah.
You know why he's saying you don't need a receipt?
He can put it in his pocket.
So he can put it in his pocket and there's no record of the money. It's for the bribe.
That's
what it is. Now you have to, that's exactly that thing happened to me when I was in Zambia. Got pulled over. Apparently I was speeding. I didn't really know what the speed limit was, but I believed her because I didn't know what the speed limit was. Because they, in Lusaka, Zambia, the speed limit goes 60, 80, 100, 60, 80. And it's sometimes within like 100 or 200 meters of each other, the speed limit's changing all the time. So they had the speed camera, pulled me over. I said, come on, you know, I've been coming up for years. I don't speed. Don't you have grace for a first-time offender? I was kind of joking, but sort of not really. And she said, oh, your first time. So I said, yes. She said, okay, usually it's 350 quattro fine. But because it's your first time, you can pay 200 quattro fine. Now, without thinking, I said, oh, wow, really? And she said, yes. And then I said, do I get a receipt for that? She said, no, if you want the receipt, it's 350. So I said, okay, give me the receipt, I'll pay 350. Okay? Not willing to pay the bribe. And sometimes it's difficult because you don't know. Sometimes you do just pay a bribe, and you don't even know it. So that's just the reality. Be prepared to wrestle with your conscience while you're out there. That's going to happen. Anyway, be prepared for emotional distractions. And the people that you're going to minister to may be very ungrateful. You're going to do a pastor's conference. At the end of the pastor's conference, you've had a 3-day pastor's conference. And on the last day of the pastor's conference, you have twice the attendance. Because they know on the last day of the conference is when the people give off all the free stuff. They've come to receive the free stuff. What do you do? Well, I've been making a register since day one, so everybody who's been coming to the conference for all 3 days, they get all the material. You are going to have pastors acting like little children and thieves. Be prepared for that. You're going to have pastors almost with tears in their eyes. I am a pastor. I am a man of God. My people are suffering. You are here with the books. I came to your conference. We need these things. Can't you help us? You're going to have pastors shouting at you like that. Alright? What are you going to do? You've got to be relaxed. You can't get into it. You can't get emotional with them. Oh, were you at the conference? No, I was not at the conference. Oh, why not? Oh, no, while I was doing this, I was doing that. Sorry, you know, all these books are for people who attended the conference. My hands are tied. Alright? Nothing I can do. No, but you don't understand. I need these things. Sorry, man. Just can't help it. You weren't at the conference. Nothing I can do. I have these Bibles, but they must go to other people that I'm training. It's just the way. Or you just sort of use the line, if I give to you, then I have to give to everybody. Right? You've got to be prepared for that. And it's very disappointing. Very disappointing to see people doing that. One of the first missions I ever did, I went met up with Dr. Hammond in Lusaka, and he was running a leaders training seminar. And he only had a limited amount of books, but there were a couple hundred people there. So he said, okay, all the evangelists, I want you to go there. All the pastors, you go there. And all the bishops, you go there. Okay, so they're divided into their categories. He said, I only have enough books for some of you. So you will get a certain kind of book, the evangelists. I've got books on evangelism, pastors. I've got books on pastoral ministry. Okay, so you're all going to get the thing. And so I was handing out to the evangelists. When I gave to the evangelists the book, they got out of that line and stood at the back of the pastor's line. And then they went from there and stood at the back of the bishop's line. They were all shuffling to try and get books from the different things. And you ask them, are you a pastor? No, I'm an evangelist. So what are you doing in this line? No, I just need the book. Alright? It's discouraging to see that. You'll have people stealing from you. Pastor, you got the boxes of books behind you while you're dishing out to people. Somebody sneaks behind you and steals a book and runs away. Alright? Pastor, bishop, evangelist. The reality. Alright? You're not there to please men, you're there to fulfill the commission of Christ. You've got to keep that in your mind. If you find yourself as a person who often falls into anger or depression, you need to confess it as sin. Right? Not all depression is sin, I'm not saying that, but sometimes the root of that is sin. Find the root, walk in victory, get it sorted out. Physical preparation. You are often going to find yourself sick in the field. Very helpful if you're somewhat physically healthy. You've got to know your itinerary prayerfully. You've got to know your purpose. You've got to understand the place and the people. You've got to consider the publicity of the events and have a detailed itinerary. The more detailed your itinerary, the better. The more contact details you have, the better. The more cell phone numbers you have, the better. When I went to South Sudan, I didn't know the people who were collecting me from the airport. All I had was a name. I heard this guy named Absala is going to collect you from the airport. That's all I knew. Then I found out that Absala was arriving at the airport the same day I was arriving at the airport. So imagine, Jason, you're going to the airport in South Sudan, Absala's going to collect you and he's arriving at the airport the same day you are. That's all you have. Now that's not encouraging. Because what if his flight is cancelled? Right? What if he's delayed? What does Absala even look like? How are we going to find each other? That's all I knew. So I had to start doing a lot of research. Eventually, I did find Absala on Facebook. I added him as a friend, spoke to him on WhatsApp. On Facebook Messenger. I had his picture. I asked him about other contacts in the area. Asked him for cell phone numbers for people. And I got a whole list of cell phone numbers. Absala did not arrive at the airport. The guy who was meant to collect me in Absala's place did not arrive at the airport. But I had the cell phone numbers of many different people and I knew where I needed to go. I had all my bags, I walked out of the airport, I found a business that was being run in a little container, walked into the container, the guy sitting over there, he had nothing to do, I made friends with him, I asked if I could use his cell phone, he let me use his cell phone, because I had no cell phone connection, I had no phone. I had my sat phone, but I didn't want to use it for that purpose. He let me use his cell phone, I could call around, so eventually I got hold of one of the contacts, and eventually I got collected from the airport. So the more detailed your itinerary, the better. Very quickly, when I was in Egypt, I had cell phone numbers of people that I needed to call, and I had accommodation that was meant to be arranged for me. I got to the accommodation, I drove by a taxi, the people at the accommodation knew nothing about me. Alright? The cell phone numbers that I was meant to use to call the people, they were not working. Thank the Lord for iPhones, because I had an email address of one of the pastors from the church. I added his email address to my contact list on my iPhone, and he had he also had an iPhone, and so I could call him using FaceTime on my iPhone, and that's how everything was arranged in the end. So the more details you have with you, the better things are going to work out. Trust me. Yes.
When we went to Indonesia, we weren't prepared like that. And there was just such a friend of ours that we had been in contact with, sent someone to pick us up from the airport. It was about a 4-hour drive that we had to go with this guy. And when we arrived at the message, whatever, he was holding up a piece of paper. It was Travis, Chris, and Emma that were traveling. And on a piece of paper, we had Trevor, T-R-E-V-A. We had Chris, K-R-I-S, and Emma, E-M-A. in, and we're just like, we hope this is the right person that we're getting in the car with. I couldn't really speak, couldn't confirm with anyone.
Yeah.
So had it not been the right person, it would have been a bit.
Yeah. I can tell you a lot more stories about, I'll tell you about my trip to America. That was tough, right? Out of all the places, the one that, when I went to America, that was one of the worst. Okay, good. Personal documents. So passports still up to date. Do you have enough pages in your passports to get stamps? Do you need any visas? Do you need a pre-book, but get the visas beforehand from an embassy in South Africa? Where is the embassy? Some places only have embassies in Pretoria. Now you've got to get, you're traveling to Ethiopia, alright? But the embassy for Ethiopia is in Pretoria, and you need a visa before you get to Ethiopia. Now what, do you have to fly to the embassy? No, well actually get companies that courier your passport for you, and there are things that, that can be done. But there are a lot of details when it comes to personal documentation that are often overlooked. Also, inoculations is another thing that you need. Not everybody likes inoculations, but legally, you need it, alright? Vehicle documents. If you're traveling, is the vehicle in your name? If it's not, you're going to have problems at the border, because now it's going to look like you are stealing the vehicle, or you're trying to sell the vehicle. So you need the right documentation. I advise people to phone the border post that you're going to cross through and ask them, when I come through with my vehicle, what documentation do I need? And they will tell you. And now it might change by the time you get there. Be prepared for that. But it's helpful. You need a lot of documentation. Sometimes they want police clearance for the vehicle. It's difficult. So a lot of logistics that are involved, just the vehicle preparation. Just vehicle document preparation. Money. How are you going to travel with money? Just going to go with your bank card? They don't have ATMs everywhere. Go to South Sudan, you can't draw money anywhere. Or you want to draw money in the country itself, you're going to pay huge bank charges. When you get to the border, you better be prepared to pay a lot of things in cash. Alright? I've seen people not prepared to pay big fees at the border, but you have to, especially if you're crossing into Zambia or Tanzania. Those countries will charge you an arm and a leg. You'll pay maybe $1,500 just to get in, you know, just paying for things like carbon tax, temporary import permit, what is the other one, road toll, road access fee, the district council levy. What on earth is a district council levy? Oh, you got to buy it, alright? Just to get permission to travel through this district that is right outside of the border. And they will stop you and ask you for those things. If you don't have it, you have to pay a fine. So find out what you need to buy when you're at the border and in what currency. Often you have to use multiple currencies at a border crossing. Sometimes you have to use rands to get out of South Africa. And when you get out of South Africa into Zimbabwe, you need to use US dollars, alright? And if you're traveling from South Africa through Zimbabwe into Zambia, right, you need the rand, the US dollars, and you need kwachas to get into Zambia. Where are you going to get the kwachas from? You need to get them at the border post. How are you going to get them? Well, when you get to the border post, there's going to be about 50 people saying, Mzungu, 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 waving money in your face, trying to get you to change money with them. And you're going to think, oh, I need these kwachas, and they're all bargaining, they're trying to get you a good price, and they're going to steal from you. Alright? Almost every border post will have a bureau there. If you can't get the bureau, you can use one of those guys, but you have to be very, very careful. First, you have to chase everyone else away. Right, you have to tell them, okay guys, business is for two, thank you very much, you can leave. You deal just with this man. You don't deal with him by yourself, you have somebody else there with you. He counts the money. You take the money from him. You don't give it back to him after he's counted it. He'll show you, I'll give you, you know, 5,000 kwacha, thank you. 5,000, you keep it. You count your money and you give it back to him. Alright? You have to be very careful because they will steal from you. Otherwise, he'll say, okay, count, he has 5,000, you count 5,000, you give it back to him. When you give it back to him, he takes 2,000, puts it in his pocket and he gives it back to you. Alright? These guys are sneaky. Be very, very careful. And they're silly. And they're blue. Alright, documentary equipment. Documentary equipment. Don't forget this. You're going to come home. You need to write newsletters and reports. You're going to see things that are interesting. And people are not going to believe you about it. Right? Got to take documentary. I went to Sudan and I saw people using bullet shells for musical instruments to worship God. Alright? Amazing. But when I show you the video footage and the pictures, it's actually believable. Alright? What material are you going to distribute? What languages do you need? You got to think about these things. And do you need permission to take material into the country? You get to the border post, they're going to tell you, unpack everything. Where are you taking these things? Are you going to drop some of this in our country? Oh, you need to pay a fee for this. Right? It's very helpful to have official looking documentation to go with you. That's what I do. I have a list of material that I take. I'll get Christian Liberty Books to stamp it, right? The Christian Liberty Books stamp. These are items that are not for retail purposes, free distribution only. I'll get Colin to write a letter for me on a letterhead, writing to the border, explaining what I'm going to do with this material. So, you got to do things to make it look as official as possible to get material in. Personal gear, you need the appropriate clothing items, toiletry, camping, sleeping equipment, protective gear. Man, you don't want to get there and realize you've forgotten your towel. Okay. Or your wet wipes or something like that. I told, when I was with my previous mission, I told the guy I was with, I said, I'll share anything with you, but I'm not sharing my toothbrush and I'm not sharing my towel. Alright, those are two things I do not share with any man. Okay. Well, all women, but I'm not going to do a mission alone with one woman. Okay, unless it's my wife. Field gear. What kind of equipment do you need? Medical aid kits. Malaria pills. Pills in case you get sick. Pills for when you definitely are going to get sick. What do you take when you have an upset stomach, when you have fever, when you're going to be doing a lot of public speaking? Your throat's going to get sore. If you lose your voice in the middle of a mission, it's bad, and it's happened to me a number of times. I once lost my voice, my throat was rasping, I could barely speak like this. I had to preach twice on a Sunday morning. After my first sermon, the people came to me afterwards, it was in a rural area, and they gave me a glass of juice. And so I took it and I started to down it, but it was pure concentrate. Right, so just that thick, sweet stuff down my rasping throat, and it was warm, and it didn't help the situation. I had to preach again after that. So be prepared for that. Bed bugs. When you get bites, mosquito bites, bed bug bites, very helpful to have something to soothe that itching, because it will drive you nuts. Food. What will you eat? When will you eat it? How are you going to cook it? Who is going to cook it? These are very, very important questions. Be prepared to eat with your hosts and to eat foreign food as well. Be prepared to stick your fingers into the sorghum lump and the fermented milk and suck your fingers off and go back for seconds. Alright? Very good thing to have. Dried fruit. Anything that can last long. Biltong. When we went, me and my wife and Francis went up Namibia, Zambia, Tanzania. We had a lot of dribbles, and that was a lifesaver, because you get hungry and it's a good source of protein.
And also, what you're gonna eat all at the camp, and then I've got our cookery, we have to eat cornflakes off the plate
without. Yeah, that happens. Contingency plan, in other words, plan for emergencies. I will often figure out where the major cities are, how far I am from the major cities, where are their mechanics in case the vehicle breaks down, or who can I call in case of an emergency. I have the details for MAF, Mission Aviation Fellowship, in the back of my folders. I usually take a a folder with me with a whole lot of documentation that I need on every mission, but it's fairly well organized. And at the back, I have all the contact details of MAF in case I need to emergency evacuate somebody. You should also leave a detailed itinerary back at the mission base, or to some people you can trust, so they can know where you are supposed to be and at what time and what the contact details are of the people you're going to be with. And wherever possible, get cell phone connection, even if it's just for a couple of days traveling through a country. Get some connectivity and be speaking to the people back at home. So if they don't hear from you for a week, they're going to start asking questions. Very good. Any questions from you? That's a lot to take in. The best way to do it is just to do it and make some mistakes along the way and learn from those mistakes. That's one of the best ways to do it. I mean, you know, things like if you forget your pillow once, you're probably not going to do it again. If you sleep without a pillow, then that's okay. Marvin.
Just curious how long it takes to.
Sometimes weeks and sometimes months. Depending on how fresh the contacts are. For example, if I go to Zambia and my focus is going to be Zambia, it won't take me that long to prepare a mission, especially if I am responding to invitations. But if I just have sent one invitation to go to Tanzania, for example, it seems to be a bit more difficult. Because then I have to start planning my route, thinking about how much time I'm going to spend, which contacts I can visit along the way. And then once I'm in Tanzania, I need to make the most of my time there. So then I go through our database and find out who's invited field teams in the past. I've got a whole database, and it's all mapped out on an African map on who has invited us and what they want from us and when they invited us. So, okay, somebody invited us 4 years ago to come and do a discipleship conference in his church in Tanzania. Let me follow up with him. Nobody's gone there yet. Nobody's responded to that invitation. So that then it starts to take a very long time. And then you have to wait for people to respond to you. Communication in Africa is a difficult thing. You know, sometimes it takes a week for someone to respond to your message and they don't respond to all your questions. All right, so you've asked them 5 important questions. He responds a week later answering one of the questions. So you get in touch with him again and again and again. Sometimes it's the day before you're going to leave and very few of your arrangements are actually confirmed and finalized. It's all sort of still up in the air. You know, you have to be prepared for that.
Yes. Maybe you have to sleep in the car.
I don't think I ever sleep in the car.
Really?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you read... No, because you'll pull... It's not nice to sleep in the car, bro. Don't do that. If you pull up on the side of the road and you pitch your tent. Okay, so we've... Often, en route, just pulled off into a campsite. There are campsites all over Africa because they expect backpackers and tourists and things. That's the cheapest accommodation, so you do that. Sometimes you're in a rural area where there is no accommodation, so you just need to set up your tent under a tree. So I've had to do that quite a lot. Yes.
No, that was what I wanted to ask. Like, would they be offended, if you bring like your backpack and your tent and your tent mattress and sleep on that when they give you like a bed?
Not always, but sometimes you have to be careful with stuff like that. If they give you accommodation and you say no, I want to sleep in my tent outside instead, it might be a bit offensive. They give you accommodation and you take out your bug spray and start spraying everything. Okay, you'd rather wait for them to go to bed before you do stuff like that. If you have your own bedding, that's not such a big train smash. Especially, you know, I like to sleep with my pillow. It's my special pillow for my, you know, my neck or whatever. They won't get offended by little things like that. But I mean, it's the same way if I had to go to your house and you had to say, John, this is where you're going to sleep tonight. No, I think I'd rather sleep outside in my tent. Even if I think, you know, there's something wrong with the bed I'm giving you, you know. It's, you ought to just be, you must have an attitude of gratitude towards your host. So always, I didn't do that on purpose, but always just be thinking of how you can show your appreciation for their hospitality. And if you are thinking that way, you'll often make the right decisions when it comes to things like that. But sometimes if you're leading a team, you have to do what's right for the team. Okay? So they might want you to stay in a place that's just... your people are going to get sick if they stay here. Sorry guys, I have to look after my team. You know? If they're a bit offended with you, sometimes you just have to. I don't think I've really been in a situation where that has had to happen, but I've heard of other people who have. So Shanna?
If you travel to remote regions, how do you balance the fact of you need to provide for yourself all the necessary stuff but also not overpack? Because it seems I'm struggling to understand how to make sure that I don't overpack to it becomes a burden for me to carry all the things that I need. But on the one side, I also have all the provisions for when I'm traveling and I need to do the biggest stuff.
Yeah. Well, firstly, don't take anything that you're not prepared to lose, okay? So that often helps minimize what you take. Secondly, pack as light as you can, but you don't want to skimp on essentials, so you got to think that too. When it comes to things like, say, clothing, for example, I generally plan on, I might not be able to do washing for about a week. So I think in terms of that. So the essentials that need to get changed every day, I make sure I have 7 of those. And then other things can be reworn. So that's kind of how I think of it. And then there are some essential clothing, like I need a suit and a tie, right? Because I'm going to preach. I need to preach in that getup. So I need that. And then I will have a couple of golf shirts because that can be used, you know, that's casual. I can go hiking in that. I can wash the car if I need to in that, but I can also use that while I'm meeting with someone important, or maybe if I have to even do some witnessing, it's not completely inappropriate to be wearing that. So that's kind of how I think.
You will have a backpack along with the bigger bag that you can carry.
So you need to have something that's kind of like a go bag, that's a smaller bag that you can take and go with. All of the luggage that I take on a mission to Africa generally is easy to carry. The essential things are easy to carry. There might be other bags of bedding and stuff that you're taking with, but you know, I have a green bag that I can carry easily, but it also doubles up into a big backpack, and then another backpack with my laptop and other things like that in. And then maybe one other bag. So, for example, when I went to Sudan, I had my big backpack. I had my smaller backpack that I carry my laptop in. And then I had one other small bag. That was my luggage. And I needed to walk around with that quite a lot. And, you know, it was quite difficult. So, actually, we have... I don't know if this is what I'm looking for. No. We have a book called Field Workers Handbook. Missionary Field Workers Handbook that we use all the time. So often that I actually just forgot the name. So we just call it the Green Missionary Book. So we have this little green book that we use, and it has lists of everything that you could use it. You know, a lot of people think I need a pack for 3 months, but you don't. You don't need a pack for 3 months, and you'll find a lot of what you do is just living on the road, right? You're stopping at the shops, you're buying things as you're going, you're buying fresh produce from the market, right? So food and things, that's just being replenished constantly as you're going along. So it's a lot like just living life in the city, but now you're living it on the road, and you can't just getting things as you need them along the way. You just need your basic, your essentials. Okay, so we can go on and on about this, but it's just to give you a basic idea of what it takes to plan for a mission. It takes a lot of work, a lot of preparation, a lot of thought, and a lot of prayer. Try and take that seriously. I know we meet every day here at the mission to pray, especially for upcoming missions every morning. So it's something that makes a big difference. Definitely makes a big difference. I noticed a huge difference. We were spending extended times in prayer when I went on. I don't know if any of you have ever met. No, none of you know Joseph. Some of you know Joseph. to spend a lot of extended time in prayer before you and I went on a mission, just the two of us, to three or four countries. And it made a world of difference, you know. It really felt like it, like the way it was paved.
Do you guys feel like a burden to pray before you went to Israel? Like you prayed and you thought you need to pray more, pray and you need to pray more?
Yeah, we definitely, had quite a burden to pray.
And also we lacked the discipline in getting them from Israel to make sure that you keep that up throughout the mission.
Yes. Yes, it transitioned very naturally into the mission. We were reading our Bibles together and praying every day for what was going on. That was helpful. Okay, let's close in prayer, and then we'll go to tea, and then we'll come back, and it will be Aubrey. Good.